Hello, I'm Andrew Burton, features editor for SearchStorage.com, and I'm here today with Greg Scholz, founder and senior analyst with the Storage.io Group. How's it going, Greg?
Hey, Andrew, I'm doing real well.
Today we're going to talk about RAID, so let's get right into it. First question, can you quickly provide a synopsis of the different RAID levels, their characteristics, and when to use each level?
Absolutely. Andrew, first and foremost, RAID should be thought of as a technique and feature functions to use to both enhance availability, but also can be used to enhance performance for I/O, for throughput, things like that. So real quickly, RAID 0, disk spread across multiple drives, gives you performance but no availability. RAID 1, data mirroring data across two or more disk drives, that gives you availability enhancement, can also enhance read operations. RAID 0, end 1, or reverse the other way, RAID 10 combines striping and mirroring, or mirroring and striping. Again, for a compromise between good performance and good availability. RAID 3, striped with dedicated parity, good for large sequential bandwidth type applications, but not as good for concurrent access, which is where RAID 5 steps in, which gives you a nice balance for striping the data across multiple drives with rotating parity. So you get a nice balance of good read performance, plus you lower your cost because you don't have to have as many drives for the mirroring. So it's a compromise between performance, availability, however, at the expense of writes because you have parity updates. And then we now have what we're starting to see more and more of are the dual parity or the multi-parity scheme, such as RAID 6. Multiple drives striped together with at least two parity drives.
Okay, sounds good. RAID's 20 years old now. Is it still applicable today as it was in the past?
Yes, absolutely, Andrew. In fact, RAID is becoming more common and transparent to the point that in many instances, it doesn't have to be hyped and thus it loses its appeal, so to speak. Even if disk drives are more reliable, we're seeing large capacity drives today, more of them being deployed and in different applications. Granted, some use scenarios RAID may not be needed or still is off in the wings. For example, on desktops, laptops, maybe even some small servers. But we're seeing RAID trickle down into the SMB, down into the lower portions of the SMB, as well as further out in the enterprise. So whether it's RAID, either a software, a hardware internal RAID controller, or external RAID array, RAID continues to proliferate even in appliances such as virtual tape libraries and other devices. Not to mention there's many new forms of RAID are appearing, including distributed, local and remote parity, as well as dual parity schemes.
Okay. With the shift towards solid-state disk and semiconductor memory-based storage, does that diminish the need for RAID to boost performance?
You know, Andrew, I'd say RAID is still needed, absolutely. They complement. In other words, RAID and solid state, they complement each other. There's a notion that RAID is just for disk drives, and that's not the case. I mean, there are implementations of solid state-based RAID, RAID in solid state, even memory systems. So they complement each other. In fact, one solid state disk vendor, Texas Memory Systems, or TMS, recently released a solid state storage system that combines traditional RAM cache with multiple flash-based modules, with the flash modules actually configured in a RAID 5 scenario for availability and read performance using the read cache for offsetting the RAID 5 penalties. Great example of hybrid storage systems as well as hybrid storage type drives complementing each other with the RAID for availability or performance. So even some general purpose x86 class servers, Andrew, and not your traditional fault-tolerant type servers from like Stratus or HP Tandem, but your off-the-shelf HP-type servers for several years now have actually been shipping mirrored RAID, RAID 1-type memory for availability and redundancy purposes. So, yeah, it's actually a good fit across different technologies. It's just not for disk drives anymore.
Okay. With the advancements in RAID and storage systems, how come RAID still isn't a replacement for backup?
You know, this has been something that's been talked about for quite some while. RAID is really about availability, Andrew. In other words, the idea is that with RAID, you're protecting against a device failure, a drive failure, a component failure, or a failure to be able to access that storage. Other data protection techniques, whether it be backup, snapshots, replication, getting a copy of the data as of a particular point in time, even continuous data protection techniques, anything that gets a copy of that data as a particular point in time is needed to complement the RAID. Reason being is that RAID just protects your data. If a drive fails, you continue to access it. If all the drives fail, what are you going to recover off of? So that's why different techniques, for example, RAID needs to be complemented with backup. Backup needs to be complemented with RAID so that if you lose that drive, you don't have to go back and recover your backup. You just rebuild and you continue to run off the RAID protection. So again, combining the different technologies that protect yourself against to a particular recovery point objective or RPO along with what your recovery time objective, balancing the different technologies, yeah, you still need to combine them for data protection.
Okay, cool, got it. Can you explain what dual parity, distributed parity, and network RAID are and why they're getting so much more attention?
Absolutely, and there's some confusion. Granted, there's some marketing going on, different marketer type terms. RAID 6 is a common one. RAID 6 is an extension of RAID 5. If we call RAID 5 is some number of disk drives, we'll call it N plus 1. N could be 5 plus a parity, so a 5 plus 1, 6 total drives, 5 actual data drives with a parity. The drives are striped with parity spread across interleaved for performance for optimizations. RAID 6 adds a second parity drive. So think of it as a N plus 2. So in other words, 5 data drives plus 2 parities, 7 total drives. The idea, the need for RAID 6 is because with the larger drives, with the larger fiber channel 300 gig, the 300, the 500, 750, 1 terabyte SATA drives, the time to rebuild a drive when it fails, not if it, but when it should fail, is quite a bit longer. So it takes longer to rebuild the drive, but that means you've got a longer exposure window for something to happen. So by having that second parity there, when a drive fails, when you're doing that rebuild, then you have that extra protection to reduce that exposure. So that's the basic idea behind a dual parity. It could be RAID 6. Some vendors like Network Appliance, they do their dual parity scheme, a variation of a RAID 6, which is actually more of a variation on their RAID 4, and that NetApp within Waffle uses RAID 4. So it's just adding the dual parity, or what they call RAID DP. So there's some other terms, such as distributed parity, where the parity may be distributed onto another array. Well, one approach to that would be using, say, two arrays clustered together, where the data is actually replicated across different storage systems. May not be parity protection per se, but it's a form of protection. There are some other techniques that involve actually spreading data parity bits, data protection, whether they're bits, whether they're bytes, chunks or blocks or larger granularity amounts of storage across different storage systems across wider and diverse geographies. So that's where we're starting to see some solutions. For example, companies like CleverSafe, companies that are in the more the wide area distributed sort of game where the data is actually spread across different locations, but then along with the data being spread is also the parity.
Okay, sounds good. How can RAID be used to address green IT issues and power and cooling challenges in the data center?
A couple points here, Andrew, regarding green storage, addressing power and cooling issues within the data center for RAID. RAID can certainly is a tool. It's part of several tools that you should have in your green toolbox, if you want, or your power and cooling toolkit. Where RAID comes into play is that for data that's less frequently accessed or that doesn't have particular performance needs, going to a RAID 5 or a RAID 6 scheme where you can reduce the number of drives, but by using that parity scheme protection, reduce the number of drives compared to, say, a RAID 1 mirroring sort of scenario. So by reducing the number of drives, you can reduce, you can offload, you can avoid some power consumption. There's the other notion, which is that RAID 1, for example, mirroring, that's going to have more drives running. You're going to consume more power. But that you have to take a look at is what is the application? If the application is requiring performance as its primary tenet, its primary objective, performance and availability, then you have to factor in the cost of energy to get the work done that has a different value as opposed to the cost of energy when you're sitting there with idle disks, such as nearline or offline storage. So it's a balancing act. for nearline storage, for offline storage, that's where you want to look to reduce your power consumption using things like RAID 5, RAID 6, where you have fewer drives, but you still have some level of protection. Where the game is to boost performance to get more work done per unit of power consumed, then you want to be looking at the performance aspect. And while RAID 1 can use more power allows you to get more work done. That has a different value price point of different set of tenancies to be gauged on.
Okay, thanks. What are the issues with RAID 6 or dual parity schemes regarding performance and data exposure?
So good point is that it sounds great. Go to RAID 6, go to RAID 5. You get double the protection. You're not doubling the number of drives per se for an incremental cost of a drive. You get more parity protection. However, like with RAID 5, on writes, there is a performance penalty that is typically offset by cache, by faster processors, hardware assist. Same thing with RAID 6, is that now you're doing two RAID calculations, two parity updates. That means you're doing twice the calculations, twice the work, so you need to have the performance offset to counter that. So the knocks on RAID 6 is that you need to offset that RAID performance penalty. In other words, leverage hardware assist or hardware offloads to perform the extra calculations to assist with data movements. Some systems just rely simply on software. Some rely on a combination of software running in their controllers along with a hardware offload ASIC or assist. Some are optimized for large writes while others for small, some for reads and writes. So the point there is understand the solution that you're looking at. If you're looking at a RAID 6, how is it implemented? How is it deployed? What are the trade-offs?
Okay, sounds good. Switching gears a little bit, is RAID relevant only for the enterprise, or should SMBs and SOHOs be concerned with RAID as well?
It's an interesting question there, Andrew, in that is RAID relevant just for the enterprise? No, RAID is relevant for the enterprise, the SMBs, the SOHOs, and it could just be a matter of time before we actually see RAID. Actually, RAID is appearing in the very small offices, even in some consumer-type products, and you don't even realize it yet, but not on a massive scale. That's yet to come. Turning it around a little bit, so yeah, the need, the relevancy for RAID, it's across the board, whether it's in an enterprise storage system, whether it's in a virtual tape library, a dedupe appliance, a storage appliance, a server. RAID, whether it be for protection, for performance, for availability, there is certainly applicability to it. Turning it the other way, do the small businesses, the work groups, the small office, home office environments, do they need to be concerned about RAID? There's where the difference comes into play is it should be transparent. They shouldn't have to worry about what RAID level they're setting up, what RAID level they're configuring, how the stripes are set up, what the chunk size, what the allocations. In other words, traditional RAID technology deep dive points. It needs to be very, very simple for them, such that at most they say, do you need high performance or do you need high availability? The system takes the care of that. The system virtualizes that. The system masks that. So, yes, there's relevance across from the enterprise to the SOHO, the work group, to the remote office, branch office, but it's how much do they need to be focused on it, how much do they need time worrying about it. That's where the focus shifts.
Okay, good. Well, that being said, where's the best place and technique to implement RAID if you have to choose?
So, of course, it's the old adage. The best place to put it is wherever it makes sense. Where does it make the most sense? It's where what are you trying to address? So, for example, in a higher-end system, you may have some functions of RAID being performed in an external storage array, in an enterprise, a mid-market, or even an entry-level array being performed in hardware with hardware offload and assist. Likewise, you may have RAID adapters in servers that are actually striping and spreading data across multiple RAID controllers for high throughput, for high performance, for high IOPS. In some instances, you may have servers using software host-based RAID across external RAID arrays. So it's really going to come back to what is it that you're looking for, what's the application functionality. Some VTLs, for example, started out using software RAID, now are shifting to hardware RAID adapters and external RAID arrays to boost their performance for IOPS, for throughput, for read and write operations, as well as a means of offloading their main processors so they can do more compute-intensive tasks like compression, encryption, deduping, single instancing, things like that. So it could very well be that the best place for RAID for the technology could be in several different points, given your particular needs, your particular environments. I know it's a loose answer, but it really is going to depend on the different scenarios and the tasks at hand. Key to it, though, may be that you may not be cognizant of all the different places where RAID is being deployed, which that could very well be part of virtualizing the storage, virtualizing the servers.
Okay, sounds good. We talked a little bit about solid-state drives earlier in the conversation, but you know, this seems like it's sort of far off, and it also seems like what they're calling hybrid drives will be here a long time before true solid-state drives. How do hybrid drives play into RAID schemes and tactics?
So the way the hybrids play in, again, it gets back to a complementary. Think about RAID. RAID can be used for availability, for redundancy, but it can also be used for performance. So in the case of Texas Memory, TMS, what they're currently using is multiple flash drives or multiple flash cards configured in an N plus 1, a RAID 5 sort of scenario. That way, if one card fails, they continue to have the permanency for the flash. But they're using the RAM for the performance. It's literally just a new variation of a classic RAID 5 array, where cache was used for the performance, and then the drives are used for the permeance, for the protection aspect, for the redundant duplicating of the data, the parity information. So the same thing comes into play with these new hybrid drives, is that with flash, you have permeance. However, flash is not known for high write performance. In fact, flash traditionally has been plagued with the more write updates you do to flash NAND flash memory. Flash memory being is what you typically have like on a USB thumb drive versus RAM or DDR memory, what you'd have in your actual computer. Flash, typically, the more you write to it, the more you update it, you'll introduce some error. So there's a likelihood that you'll have an error, a problem, something will fail. So hence, you're seeing scenarios where some flash drives are being deployed or flash memory in RAID-type schemes, whether it's mirrored, whether it's RAID 5 protected or others, for the permeance, for that protection, but also there's the performance aspect, is that the ability to read, you can boost read performance significantly with, say, a RAID 5 or even a RAID mirror stripe type. So again, it's leveraging the different media types and balancing off the performance, the availability aspect that RAID provides.
Okay, thanks. Earlier, you talked a little bit about the fact that disks and drives are growing in size, and what's happening with disk rebuild times? For specifically, how do preemptive rebuilds work, and what other techniques are appearing, if any, to accelerate rebuild times?
Good questions. Actually, well, let's split this into two. So what's happening with the rebuild times? Well, on one front, rebuild times are actually getting better. Now, before I go off on the limb on that one, likewise, just as drives become faster and the rebuilds on the controllers becomes faster, we're getting hit by an exponentially growing amount of capacity. So the net result is that any improvement, any net rebuild time improvements are being offset by drives doubling in capacity at a very, very rapid rate. So instead of making a 250 gig drive copy faster than it did a couple years ago, now we've doubled that drive from 250 to 550 to 750 to 1 terabyte. So any net improvement in performance in the rebuild is being offset by more capacity and more drives to rebuild. So in some cases, solutions use preemptive rebuilds to eliminate or avoid known bottlenecks from the rebuild or known limitations, for example, in the number of concurrent rebuilds that could take place at any given time by proactively performing a rebuild or copy operation. The risk is that false positives or an incorrect diagnosis could cause excessive and premature drive rebuild or copy operations from taking place. So while preemptive can be a good thing, you want to do your homework to identify if the preemptive approach is really a workaround for some other known limitation, as opposed to being another tool for managing your storage, another tool in your data protection arsenal. Ask the vendors how many concurrent rebuild operations can take place, as well as what is the impact of those rebuild operations on normal running workload.
Okay. What does the future have in store for RAID?
You know, RAID recently, Andrew, was diagnosed as a dead technology. So being declared dead by some in the industry moves RAID into the category of what's called zombie technology. In other words, technology that's declared dead, but still very, very viable, still very, very functional, and still a key technology. Other examples of zombie technologies include the mainframe, Unix, magnetic tape, magnetic disk drives, fiber channel, and other technologies that have been declared dead for several years, and in some cases several decades, yet continue to prosper. So if anything is dead about RAID, it's probably the hype and focus we saw over a decade ago in the mid to early 90s when RAID went through its cycle of hype, similar to what storage virtualization, deduplication, CDP are going through right now. What this means is that RAID has a future perhaps more transparent, yet with some more enhancements. We're seeing distributed parity, dual parity, hybrid RAID schemes, horizontal and vertical striping, being deployed on solid state and memory, network parity among many others, as well as just ongoing performance, power mode, power enhancements. In fact, an area where I think there's a lot of activity, a lot of potential, is that of the area of intelligent power management. Being able to dynamically vary the power settings on drives to meet different service levels. In other words, we have different levels of RAID for different levels of performance and protection. I think we may see something similar with power management, where we shift from monolithic made, it's either it's on or it's off, to more intelligent power management modes where you have different levels of power savings and performance.
Okay, that's great. One final question. What are some general things to watch out for and be aware of regarding RAID?
So when we're looking at RAID, we want to look at both the RAID but also the storage system that it's being implemented on, Andrew. So, for example, what is involved in migrating a LUN or a volume from one RAID level to another, and can it be done by the controller while data is actually being read or written? Now, many vendors tell me, oh yeah, the data can be accessed while it's being modified, but you ask them that question, read and written, and you kind of get a mumbled answer by many vendors. Identify the RAID implementation, regardless of the RAID level. How is it optimized for sequential IOs versus random IOs, both reads and writes? Keep in focus what level of service for your various applications is needed and why you're using a particular RAID to meet those requirements. Is it cost savings to reduce the number of drives or the power consumption? Or is your requirement for more performance? Are you looking at dollar per capacity, dollar per watt? Or are you looking at IOPS per watt, the amount of work that can be done? Look at how cache is integrated and used in conjunction with the RAID controller, and pay attention when you're looking at solid-state memories to understand if you're using NAND flash or DDR RAM. DDR RAM is going to be more expensive. Flash is going to be less expensive. You're going to get what you pay for. It's different levels of service for different workload needs.
Okay. I think that wraps it up. Thanks a lot for being with us today, Greg.
My pleasure, Andrew.